week. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Some have called it the war that won't go away. Some refer to it as the recurring nightmare. By whatever description, the killing continued in South Vietnam this past week, 2 years after the signing of what was called a ceasefire agreement, but which turned out to be only the basis for another lull in fighting which has persisted one way or another for decades. Communist forces, pushing a determined campaign, captured the provincial capital of Phuc Long, 70 miles from Saigon. A report on its possible significance from Peter Collins in Saigon.
The week here in South Vietnam brought fresh evidence that the war, which was supposed to end with the Paris Agreement 2 years ago, is entering a new and perhaps decisive phase. After 7 days of sustained heavy fighting, North Vietnamese troops, backed by tanks and artillery, overran the last few hundred government soldiers holding out in the province capital of Phuc Long, 70 miles north of Saigon. It was the last government stronghold in the area, and its loss meant that for the first time in the war, the communists had been able to capture an entire province together with its capital. The defeat cost South Vietnamese forces more than 2,000 men killed, wounded, or missing, along with a half a dozen aircraft and a substantial number of trucks and military equipment. There was no word on the fate of as many as 30,000 civilians and refugees who were trapped in and around the province capital by the fighting. Intelligence officers said there were strong indications that the Battle of Phuc Long was only the first in a series of intense North Vietnamese attacks designed to crack the military and political stalemate since the ceasefire and force President Thieu into new negotiations. In Saigon, there was both gloom and hope that the communist offensive would cause Congress to restore at least $300 million of military aid it cut last fall, a cut which some American and Vietnamese officials asserted was partly responsible for the defeat at Phuc Long. Peter Collins for CBS News, Saigon.
There are indications that President Ford will ask Congress for additional money for South Vietnam. There are also indications that Congress won't be in a hurry to grant it. There was a mild flap earlier in the week, raised primarily in the news media, when word came that a U.S. naval task force, including the aircraft carrier Enterprise, had set sail from the Philippines. Was it perhaps heading for Vietnam waters to somehow show Hanoi that the U.S. was concerned over the fall of Phuc Long? That, at least, was the tenor of the flap. As things turned out, the Pentagon said there was never any intention of sending the task force to Vietnam waters. It was headed for the Indian Ocean, which it entered this morning after passing through the Strait of Malacca. This week in the Middle East produced more of the same, more of the tit-for-tat raids between Israelis and Palestinians, more questions as to whether and how a peace settlement between Israeli and Arab can be achieved. And there was one new element, the U.S. agreement to sell Saudi Arabia $750 million worth of jet fighter planes. For defensive purposes, it was explained. And also, the State Department added, such a sale will help this country's balance of payments problem. The Foreign Minister of Israel, Yigal Alon, arrived in the United States for talks with Secretary Kissinger and others. In a weekend speech in California, Alon held out the possibility that a new war in the Middle East can be averted.
In spite of loud threats, and although war is possible, it is not inevitable. There is still a fair chance to avert it. First, thanks to our strength. Secondly, thanks to our foreign policy. And we shall leave no stone unturned in our search for peace.
At week's end, a Senate subcommittee headed by Idaho's Senator Frank Church issued a report recommending a cut in oil imports by the U.S. and the rest of the industrialized world to ease the threat of another oil embargo.
I'm not saying that all of this is going to be easy. What I am saying is if we fail to do it, the economic problems will be much more severe. And furthermore, we remain vulnerable to the next embargo. And after all the rhetoric we've heard for 18 months from presidents of this country, the truth is we are just as vulnerable today to a reimposed embargo as we were when the first embargo occurred.
The church committee also proposed that the government become a party in negotiation of long-term contracts between oil companies and oil-producing nations. At week's end, the White House said President Ford had completed all details of his energy and economic program, and that he will outline it in his State of the Union address to Congress this coming Wednesday. A key element, a tax cut for individuals of $10 to $15 billion. There were repeated but not so insistent calls for enactment of wage and price controls. But Treasury Secretary Simon, for one, emphasized his and the administration's opposition to this route.
Can these people be serious? When are we going to learn that this great system in the United States, which has provided the American people with the highest standard of living and the greatest prosperity in the world, should be allowed the freedom to function? All I say to these people who are calling for wage and price controls today is three things. Number one, they have absolutely no ability at economic analysis. They have damn short memories, and their knowledge of history is incredible.
As the week progressed, there was more gloomy economic news, new layoffs of automobile workers, new closings of automobile production plants, longer lines at unemployment offices around the country, so much so that help wanted signs began to hang out for more workers to handle the flow of claims from the unemployed. In Wall Street, the stock market, whose actions mean different things to different people, persisted in moving upward again this week. And a lot of the experts were saying, this is a harbinger of things to come, 6 or 8 months down the road. Encouraging, but of little satisfaction to the newly unemployed. At midweek, unexpectedly, three of the convicted and jailed Watergate figures were released, their sentences reduced to time already served. Magruder, Kalmbach, and Dean. Judge Sirica based his action on what he called changed circumstances, but without further explaining that.
I don't think it has any bearing on what I might or might not do on any other sentence. This is something that I thought I should do in these cases. And I did what I thought was right, and that's the only comment I can make, frankly.
And the week brought a curious flare-up of an old controversy involving the spy ship Pueblo, captured by the North Koreans 7 years ago in 1968. The man who was executive officer of the Pueblo at the time, former Lieutenant Edward Murphy, scorned a Navy Commendation Medal at a ceremony this week and blamed the Pueblo skipper, Lloyd Bucher, for delaying the crew's release.
I hold the commanding officer directly responsible for the release of the crew being delayed from October 11th until December 23rd of 1968. And it should also be noted that because of his antics, as I've called self-centered antics, the crew endured severe mental and physical torture, which was totally needless, as well as the very obvious fact that the United States never got the return of the USS Pueblo.
Skipper Bucher denied the charges and asked, why did Murphy wait this long to bring them up? The Navy promised to look into the matter. Otherwise, this week, the Russians put two cosmonauts into space for a link-up with the orbiting Soviet space laboratory. There were hopeful hints out of Belfast that the IRA would extend its Christmas truce to the end of this month. Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield returned from a visit to mainland China to say that the prospects for improving relations between the U.S. and China still further are very encouraging. The World This Week has been produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News.